Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. On Sunday, May 30th, 2010, we recorded Variant Frequencies live at Balticon 44. Before we get into the story, here's a brief message from our sponsor. If you provide technical support to clients, colleagues, friends, or family, have you found an easy, cost-effective way without being there in person? The best way to provide technical support is to do it online with GoToAssist Express. Help friends and clients learn how to use new software and fix family computer problems without being there in person. GoToAssist Express lets you easily view and control any other computer online so you can quickly resolve technical issues. Whether you're in customer support, technical consultation, or management, or just a computer guru, GoToAssist Express will help you. Increase revenue, reduce travel, and support time, and service more clients. Brought to you by Citrix, you know GoToAssist Express will be easy and secure. Our listeners can try GoToAssist Express free for 30 days. For this special offer, visit GoToAssist.com/techpodcast. That's visit GoToAssist.com/techpodcast. This recording was intended to be our final episode of Variant Frequencies. Because it was recorded at a convention, in front of a live audience, the audio quality is not what I normally like to put out. There was a loud fan in the room, and frankly, I stumble a few times during the story. That is the advantage of a studio recording. I can edit. So here's the deal. If we get enough comments on our site about doing a studio version of this story, then I will do that and post it here. However, I need to know that you really want that. If you want a nice quality version of this story, then tell me. Now, on to our story.
Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel, sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Lights, thank you.
Turn slowly.
Not that slow. All right. Hello. I'm Rick Stringer. This.
Yes! Yeah, baby!
This is Variant Frequencies live at Balticon 44. The story's fairly long, so I'm not going to do much of an introduction here. We're going to get right into this story. And our story today is by Jonathan C. Gillespie. It is narrated by me, Rick Stringer, along with our special guest, Michael Spence. Woo! The Encroacher by Jonathan C. Gillespie. Dear Mom, I got most of my boxes put up today. I don't know who at the rental company is in charge of safety inspections, but they need to lose their job. That damn truck teetered like a sleepy toddler. The entire way up the interstate, the bed creaked, and I just waited for the lift gate to reel open and spill my stuff out on the road. But it was cheap. What matters is I got out of there. I finally left that house. I know. You're not ready to talk on the phone yet. And I won't have internet for a while, since it was so expensive to relocate. But maybe I can clear some things up on paper. Write you a note, like you used to leave hidden for me in my lunchbox. Remember that? Wedged right there in between my pasta dinosaurs and apple. Mom, It's not about you. It's not about Kansas City. You know I liked it there. I know you wanted me to stay close, but I had to go. Just after you lost Dad, you'd call and cry into the phone. Hours in the dark with just your sobs and half sentences. I can't bear KC without Sabrina. The bed felt cold. Colder than if I'd slept in the living room on that beat-up couch she bought when we moved in. I actually did that one night. To get away from the empty bed. Didn't help. It wasn't the same house anymore. The joy is buried with her. That's why I moved. Changed jobs. You have to understand it. I'll still visit. But I need those night shifts. I need to keep occupied when it's dark. I need a different place, even if it's an old, creaky money pit, like you think it is, in the middle of nowhere. Nowhere. Sounds nice, actually. I'll write you again soon. Love you, Mom. You're Polly. Dear Mom, something happened. Good, if you can believe it. And I want to tell you, despite yourself, I bet you can't wait to hear what it is. Let me back up then. I went out to grab some groceries yesterday. Bachelor chow, frozen pizzas, ramen, canned stew, some beer. Don't worry, not too much beer. Turns out Lubbock, North Dakota has a McDonald's. It's near the interstate ramp. Don't know how I missed it the first day. Got big time hungry when I saw it. First time in weeks. So I figured I'd best act on that. I sat in the parking lot on the tailgate. Enjoyed what passes for an early spring breeze in this state. Midway through my burger, I heard a little sound. Sounded kind of like a low rolling chirp. It came from a big juniper bush on the edge of the lot. I got off the truck's bed, walked over to get a better look. Two eyes looked at me from the bush near the base of the tree. It was a big tomcat, crouched like he was ready to pounce on the world, but only if he had to. He wouldn't come out at first, but eventually the burger got him out. Mom, I have a new friend, and I owe it all to artery-choking fat. He's in the living room right now, curled up on the couch, thoroughly stuffed with manwich. He's a Maine Coon, deep brown, kind of standoffish, real quick to let you know what he feels like. But he's not bad. I think he used to be someone's pet. Doesn't strike me as feral. Besides, I don't see your average cat lasting a winter outside up here. I guess he's recently homeless. Gotta run. First day starts in half an hour. Or is that first night? Either way, talk to you later. Write me back. Love you always. Polly. Mom, been a week. So I wanted to write again. Still no phone. I have mixed feelings about that. True solitude can be kind of nice, but I feel naked, you know? Like I'm unprepared without toting a cell around. Without that umbilical to the world. Years in sales must have done that to me. My boss has years in concrete and screaming drivers. He's tough. Working the road isn't bad, but at night it's a little surreal. Just black woods forever. There's so little light out there.
You get on a long stretch of interstate about 2 in the morning, and you're lucky to see a car every 15 minutes. The work floods, the only lights for miles make this island of illumination, and you feel what it means to be surrounded by darkness. We talk sometimes, me and the other guys. English is a second language for half of them, though, and I worry I make an idiot out of myself trying to relate. The only thing that's got me nervous are the reflective markers we lay down. I don't know what it is about them. I always feel like I'm dancing with death when we close a lane for work. Like we're tempting someone to come over that line. Tempting fate. Speaking of, fate showed up last night. I'm not trying to scare you, Mom, but I saw a man get killed. We'd been grading the slow lane all night. The middle of my break, I had leaned up against one of the trucks to sip coffee when Enrique pointed up the road, brought the floods down a bit. Bambi had shown up. This beautiful white-tailed deer, flicking her tail every few steps. I'd heard they occasionally get through the fences. She poked her way into the center lane. I wanted to make sure she crossed and quick. So I walked towards her. Enrique dropped the floods a little more. You'd think she'd run, right? But she turned, real quick. And when she saw me, those ears went up. She froze, just this black outline in the dark, like my presence glued her in place. I made some noise, stomped the blacktop. I turned around, and the boss was going after Enrique, saying that was dangerous. He turned up the floods, and they both looked in my direction, surprised. I looked back, and the deer was on the ground, kind of twitching, fur rustling like one of those time-elapsed decompositions on a nature show. I assumed for a moment that the deer had caught mad cow or something equally unlikely. But if you'd seen it, you'd have agreed that the way it moved there on the ground was unnatural. Then it got up, just stood up, rigid, bone straight, and looked at me like it was fine. But the eyes told the lie. Those eyes weren't just wide, they were black. And that deer didn't move. It just stared at me. The deer vanished in a crunch of glass and metal, this wall of steel that slammed into it. It was a blue truck that ran off the road, flipped over, and pitched down an embankment into a tree. Some exhausted farmer, the cops later said. Took the jaws of life for the fire department to get the body out. I can't get that deer's eyes out of my head. Maybe not the eyes, though. Maybe it was that look. I guess I'm just tired. I'm not making sense, I bet. I haven't seen scratches all day. Oh, I almost forgot. That's what I call my new cat. Got his shots. Vet likes him. I hear him moving around upstairs, those little knives of his on the old oak floorboards. I'm going to say hi and then get us fed. Love always, Mom. Polly. Mom, I don't know why you haven't written back yet. I don't know if you're still upset or if you want me to drive down there to the nursing home and grovel. I'm still going to write. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just tired. It's not too much work. Work is still okay. It's a combination of things at home. This house needs some work, but I didn't expect this much. The upstairs bathroom lights don't work. I spent 3 hours this afternoon on an off day running wiring in the attic. It's a mess up there. Whoever owned this house a few years back had started some work, had pulled some boards out and just heaped them wherever they could. I found a dusty hammer and a crowbar and some tangled cabling and a decades-old light bulb socket. I don't know what their game plan was, but They left a real mess, like they stopped in the middle of the project for no reason. Bob Vila with ADD. So, the attic doesn't have any light except what comes through this single filthy window. Scratches is driving me up the wall. He spends every night on the second floor meowing and scratching his way around, exploring. I've been thinking about getting him declawed, just so I don't have to hear them in the wood. It might be the upstairs windows that have him occupied. Maybe he sees deer some nights. Write me soon, will you? Please? Paul. Dear Mom, thank you for writing. Did you have to start it out like that, though? Even if I wanted a phone, my credit card is maxed and the bank account's balance is a laugh. But I don't need any of your money, so please stop offering. You keep that. Get yourself something nice on the next bus trip out. I'll be fine. Really. To answer your question about scratches, I took him to the vet. Might as well get him checked just to make sure everything's all right. The vet in the office that day was this old fart. Guess I shouldn't say that, but I didn't shell out $35 I couldn't spend to get blown off. He gave Scratches a clean bill of health, and it's normal for a cat to said it's normal for a cat to roam like that. I told him about the night calling, about the upstairs floor, and how Scratches is up there all the time now. You know what he said? He said cats get preoccupied easily. That a strand of hair in the wind or a speck of floating dust or anything could get Scratches fascinated. I wasn't satisfied, to say the least. So I told him about the other thing that happened. When I was off last Saturday night, I asked him what made Scratches come charging into my bed, dash across my chest, and scramble under the bed frame. He didn't seem concerned. He said the cat probably knocked something over and spooked itself. He asked me if that sounded right. I told him what I found the next afternoon. A mirror that I'd left up there in one of the bedrooms, lying face down. I told him I would have heard that fall over. You know what that withered bastard suggested? That I go to the doctor and have my ears checked because I've been working near machinery. Looks like I lost track of time. So let me write you again tomorrow. Scratches is upstairs right now starting his shift. I'm due for work, too. Gotta run. Thanks again for writing. Love, Polly. Mom, I know it's been a while since I wrote. Sleep has been a reluctant companion. Something's been keeping me up. It started over a week ago. I'd come off the shift from hell. We had to get a lane finished, tried to beat morning traffic, came in at 3 the prior afternoon and worked till 2 in the morning the next day. I was out when I hit the sheets. I don't remember showering, but the sheets weren't dotted with road tar, so I must have. I haven't been in bed half an hour when I woke to a god-awful, ear-splitting shriek. I've never heard anything like it. Think of a chalkboard scratch and a baby's cry rammed together through a megaphone speaker. Just thinking about it, my fingers are trembling. It had come from upstairs. My bedroom door doesn't have a deadbolt, Mom. It's got one of those old-fashioned wrought iron handles with an ancient keyhole. I stared at that door for several minutes. All I heard was wind in the trees outside. I grabbed the flashlight from the nightstand drawer and took a Phillips head screwdriver from tools I dumped at the foot of the bed. I don't know what I planned to do with that, but it felt better than nothing. I stepped into the hall. I don't think I ever hated being broke like I did in that moment. Trying to save some bucks. I'd left every light in the house off. The living room, with its vaulted ceilings, loomed like a cave. I clicked the flashlight on and walked down the hall. Everything squeaking, floorboard seemed as loud as a tree falling. I held the screwdriver out in front like I'd actually help if I ran into whatever I'd heard. I inspected each piece of furniture in the kitchen, then the living room. Got that light in every nook and cranny, looking for where something might be. I rounded the living room corner and turned to look up the stairs. Mom, if the living room was dark, that second floor was like the bottom of the ocean. That really didn't sit well with me. There were plenty of windows in the upstairs rooms, and even on a dim night, some light should have bled through. The 20 steps looked like Everest. I directed the flashlight to the top stair, illuminated the wall past it. Nothing but dust sparkling in the light. So I gripped the handrail and started up. My heartbeat practically echoed off the walls. I didn't hear my steps. I didn't hear any noise at all, just that ringing in the ears when the world goes mute. I reached the top and looked down the upstairs hallway. I knew I sure as hell hadn't closed any doors, but each room was shut, except the last one on the left. I mustered up enough breath to call out for scratches. I waited a moment. Heard nothing. I ran through some scenarios. Maybe he'd seen something outside, had hid. Maybe an owl or something had flown near the window and startled him, or worse. Maybe the sound I heard was him getting crushed by something he'd knocked over. But I knew I didn't have anything up there big enough or precarious enough for him to commit kitty suicide with. So I started for that far room, one baby step at a time, and kept to the opposite wall of each closed door as I passed it. I finally reached the open door. I took a deep breath and looked inside. There's one window in there, just one. It cast a dull gray light on the floor. That glow illuminated gouges in the wood, big, deep scrapes that exposed the lighter fresh flesh beneath the aged skin. Something had really dug into the wood. I stepped inside and panned the light around. I hadn't put anything in the room yet. The bathroom door to the right was just barely open. I shined the light towards it and saw my left eye reflected in the mirror beyond. I stepped towards my image. Slowly pushed the door open. When I crossed the threshold into the bathroom, I reached my hand. God help me, I still get scared just thinking about this. Mom, I'm sorry, but you're the only person I have. I reached my hand over and flicked the light switch. A single click rung out, but no light. I suddenly remembered this was another room that I, with bad wiring. I was in a terrible room if there was someone in the house with me. That was it. I was done. I turned to leave. I told myself, screw this, and resolved to find whatever the hell had happened tomorrow after I spent the night in a hotel or even a parking lot. But my eye caught something as I swept the beam back around. I froze. The washtub. Crouched there behind the rim, two small ears flattened. Beneath them, two utterly black eyes. Two bottomless pits stared at me. Stared through me. It was scratches. He'd heard me the entire time. Hadn't answered, hadn't moved. He just watched, Mom. Just waited while I fumbled around in the dark. I froze, waited for him to move, said his name. He didn't do anything. I raised the flashlight, but no red redness flashed back. Those eyes drank the light thrown at them. I backed out of the bathroom. Scratches watched me with a slow turn of his head, watched me like he studied every move I took. I closed the door. Closed it. And the bedroom door behind me. When I was almost back at the steps, I heard a groaning, creaking sound. I didn't want to turn around, but I did. I turned around and looked back down that damn hall. Scratches sat on the other side of the now open bedroom door, watched me, crouched low, unmoving, a still life study of predation. That spunky cat I'd found in the parking lot, he wasn't so friendly looking anymore. I hurried downstairs, grabbed my keys by the door, jumped in my truck and hauled out of there. The trees seemed to close in on me, a coniferous cave in as I drove my old pickup. When I emerged from the dirt road on the interstate, I stopped at the first hotel, checked in with the board clerk and stayed up all night with the television on. Thought about calling you even. It was late. I didn't have enough money to stay longer than one night. I came home the next day. Didn't see Scratches. Haven't since. And I'm not going upstairs to find him. The living room is lit up like Christmas, an illuminated perimeter between me and the second floor. My room is the inner sanctum, the last line of defense. I've got 6 lights on in here. A table lamp, 2 standing lamps, 2 tea candles, and a shop light directed right at the door. My soldiers. Everything I could muster. It still feels dim. It's still oil black upstairs. I need a beer. I'll write you first thing tomorrow morning. I can't think about this anymore right now. Polly. Mom, I'm sorry for how messy this is. I'm bearing down on an old road map. Best I can do in this truck. I have the headlights on the front door, and I look at that house every few seconds just to be sure. To be sure he's not out here. You ever notice what happens when you're really drained? Stuff jumps out at you. Static objects become animate things. The sleepless mind fills in dim perception with its own imagings. Some of the dot guys are former truckers. They have a pet name for it. Midnight fever or something. I wish I had midnight fever. I'd even take delirium at this point. But I know what happened tonight was real, and it's not going to stop until I make it. Scratches his back, assuming he ever left. Assuming that's really him. I first saw him again on my way back from the kitchen several hours ago. My dinner steaming in a styrofoam container. I don't know why I stopped at the bottom of the stairs. I should have gone straight to my room. That's been my rule for the last week. My self-imposed method for keeping my sanity. Don't look upstairs. But I did. He sat on the top step, those twin black holes burning pitch malice into my soul. I surprised myself with my reaction. Maybe it was the product of fatigue, or maybe it was frustration. You know what I did? I walked over to the front door, I swung it wide, pointed outside, and told him to get the hell out of my house. He didn't move. Didn't care. I cursed at him, called him everything I could think of, put my food down on the bottom step, grabbed my work boots, told him how they were steel-toed, how I was going to grind him into the floor with them, break his bones, and mess him up so bad that the ASPCA would lock me up for years. He just watched. I hurled my boots at him. Felt good to do it. Realized later how dumb it was. They flew by not a foot from him. He didn't even flinch. I heard them smack against the wall. They're still up there. I did my best impression of raw defiance. But a ruse was all I had, and he smelled its stink all over me. I backed to the front door, closed it, and walked to my room. Gave the stairs, his stairs, a wide berth. Scratches just watched me, like he knew he could pick his battles in his gradual assault on my sanity, that it was my off night and he could torture me all evening. 2 hours ago, I reclined in my bed, eyes getting heavy, reading an old book whose words were blending together in my exhausted stupor. I felt something on my scalp, like a tickle. I put my hand in my hair and the back of my knuckles touched fur. I flew off the bed to the floor, knocked over two lamps, and scrambled backwards, put my bare heels on the broken bulb, slammed my shoulder against the chest of the drawers, and I slipped on my ass, got my hot wax all over me from a tea candle. I didn't notice the pain. I was focused on something else. Scratches sat on the headboard, the window wide open, waved its curtains in the steady cold wind. I hadn't heard it open. I hadn't seen him come inside. I stumbled up, ripped the door open, and dashed out of that room, bloody feet leaving a trail behind me. Got into my truck. I've been here ever since, getting my courage up, writing to the only person I can tell about this crazy shit. I'll mail this to you tomorrow, along with better news. But I have some threats to make good on. I've got a hammer, my butane torch, and my handsaw. I want to make it quick, in case any part of my friend is still in there. But I'm ready, in case he isn't. Love always, your Polly.
Dear Mrs. Tully, per your instructions, I've released your son's personal belongings now that our investigation has concluded. We've impounded the truck to keep it safe while you work out the details of what to do with it. We won't charge you any release fee for it. Deputy Chalmers and I thought it was the least we could do. Take all the time you need to get things taken care of. Attached, please find the handwritten note we originally discovered on the passenger side seat of the truck. We had to record its contents as part of the investigation. I regret this, but I hope you understand this necessary procedure. We're not used to the kind of scene we discovered at your son's residence. Documentation helps when there's so much left to explain. Let me express again my deepest sympathies for your loss. Please remember your son as the warm, loving man you knew. I don't think we'll ever fully understand what drove him to set that house ablaze, but we can find sympathy and compassion for what he was going through. Sincerely, Sheriff Warren Price.
Thank you for listening to The Encroacher, by Jonathan C. Gillespie. I want to thank Michael Spence for helping out with this narration. In December of 2005, I suggested to my wife Anne and our friend Matt Wallace that we started podcasting their stories in January of 2006. Variant Frequencies was born. And now I'd like to bring up Matt and Anne, because without these two people, Variant Frequencies never would have existed.
Thank you. I'm Ann Stringer. I sleep with the producer, and he gets my stories on the internet.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank everybody that ever listened to Variant Frequencies, and especially people who took the time to comment. It all meant a great deal to us. And thanks to everybody who ever contributed to it in any way. And it's been a great run. It's been a lot of fun. And especially thanks to Rick for producing a real high-quality production.
I'm Matt Wallace, and I don't have a line as good as Anne's. I love that she sat there looking comatose for like the last 2 hours, and she had that thing holstered, man. You could tell. Damn her. pretty much everything, every good thing that has happened with my writing and whatever career I've built to this point happened because of this podcast, like straight up. There's no way around that. And I owe it to these lovely people here. Anne is very talented in her own right, and you know, and Rick is just one of the nicest guys and one of the most talented podcast producers out there. And it kind of pisses me off. I don't think anyone will ever realize like what a momentous thing this is, because this really was, all bullshit aside and nothing to do with my own work, one of the highest quality fiction podcasts that was out there.
Yeah.
So for those of you who showed up here and for everybody who's going to listen to this eventually, I just want to say thank you for helping us mark that and helping appreciate it. And, you know, in the end, all this shit is all about you guys who listen. So thank you very much.
And there's just one more thing that I want to say. I don't recommend that you stop subscribing to the feed, because you never know when Varying Frequencies will jump at you out of the dark. Thank you, everyone. We really appreciate you coming. That's it. Finally, I want to say thank you to everyone who has listened to Variant Frequencies and all of the wonderful people who have contributed to Variant Frequencies. All of our authors, the voices, the music, and most of all, I want to thank Matt Wallace and Ann Stringer, for without the two of them, Variant Frequencies would not have existed. Thank you.